Thanks.
Welcome to today's ILTA 20-minute panel discussion entitled, Dude, Where's My Phone? Authentication and the Future of Legal IT. My name is Corey Wright. I'm a cyber assurance architect at Sandia National Laboratories, and I will be your moderator for today's discussion. I'm thrilled to be joined by three speakers today. I will name each one of them and ask them to give a brief 30-second background or share a little bit about their background, and then we'll move on to the topics. Our first panelist is Kenneth Jones, or prefers to be called Ken. Sorry, Kenneth. He is the Chief Operating Officer at Zerdict.
Hey, everyone. As Corey mentioned, I'm Ken Jones, the Chief Operating Officer of the Zerdict Group. We are a technology subsidiary of Tennenbaum Keel LLP, which is a litigation boutique law firm based in Newark, New Jersey, with offices in Pennsylvania, Florida, and the state of Washington as well. I'm an active member of ILTA, currently a member of three committees, those in the security domain, vendor relations domain, and one relating to volunteerism. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thanks, Ken. Our second panelist is David Forrestal, a managing partner at SecureIT 360. Welcome, David.
Hello, everyone. David Forrestal here, SecureIT 360. We're a cyber-only firm. We've been around about 14 years, which is old for cyber. We've got teams of pen testers, security advisors. We do 24/7 monitoring. We kick bad guys out and do investigations, all those types of things. So we're right in the thick of it. And we work with a bunch of law firms, probably about 300, including Brian and many others. So
thank you, David. And on to Brian Clark, a cybersecurity manager at Porzio, Bromberg, and Newman. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Corey. Happy to be here. So I work for Porzio, Bromberg, and Newman, which is a mid-sized firm headquartered in Morristown, New Jersey, where I'm coming to you from today. Prior to that, I worked for another law firm for 23 years in a variety of roles. So since I've been at Porzio, since last February, I've been focused exclusively on security. I'm also a volunteer with ILTA, primarily on the ILTACON committee, overseeing the, among other things, the security sessions that we'll see at ILTACON in Orlando next month.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. Well, thank you, all three of you, for joining us today. We'll move on to our first question. And that is, this topic that we're tackling today was presented at Legal Week not too long ago, and it was extremely popular. And I wanted to just kind of get a little bit of your take on why you think this topic is resonating so greatly with the population today. And to get us started, I thought we'd start with Ken, if you wanted to share your thoughts.
Yeah, sure thing, Corey. And I'll be brief. Broadly speaking, security has the combination of being incredibly important and complex. So in addition to authentication, areas like security awareness training, pen testing, endpoint protection, cyber insurance, and the like are really important. I happened to write an article on cyber insurance summarizing one of those legal sec sessions that I know Brian and David might have attended in this India conference in May. But you know, collectively, it's ever changing. It's a difficult area to master, and everybody needs to be keenly aware of it. So it's not a surprise to me that it would be incredibly popular at Legal Week.
Brian, David, anything to add?
I'd agree. It's a pain point for everyone. I think everyone can agree that we're falling short of the goal. It's something that extends into popular culture. Like you have, you know, man on the street interviews where you try to get people to say what their password is. I remember, when Jon Stewart would interview Bill Gates on The Daily Show, he'd ask him, oh, what's your password? And then when Bill didn't give him the password, he'd ask him like, oh, well, what's your pet's name? You know, what street did you grow up on? So it's something that everyone's aware of. Like, you know, it's funny, but we don't really do it well. And we're not really, equipping our people, I think, to make the right decisions all the time.
It's just a hard problem to solve, right? We're all struggling. David, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think Brian and Ken hit the nail on the head. It's multifaceted. And also, too, I mean, the biggest issue is that the escalating arms race with us, the defenders, versus the criminals. As soon as we get a tighter authentication protocol or a better way to do it, they figure out another way around it. So, it's never done. And then the myriad of systems we have nowadays work from anywhere, cloud systems, on-premise systems, and the proliferation of technology just continues to grow. Those are the challenges that everybody's dealing with right now.
Let's continue on that theme, David. Let's dig a little deeper into it. What are some of the biggest challenges with ensuring that our authentication mechanisms are secure?
Well, as I just referenced, first of all, the criminals, they're going to keep knocking on all the doors and windows till they find the one that you left unlocked or that's weaker, and they can just push it open. And, a lot of times you can't really see what's going on behind the scenes. And when you integrate multiple applications, certain applications may not support the same level of authentication that you desire or that a higher authentication is available. Along with that, to kind of just give you an example of where it continues to be complex with the bad guys is, hey, everybody's got to have MFA. Oh, crud, they figured out how to get around it. All right, well, we're going to get better with MFA. All right, we got better with MFA. Dang it, they're still getting around it. And so now, you've got things like FIDO2, which is looking to be, a much stronger and a better option for passwordless authentication, but it's new. Applications are going to have to start becoming FIDO compliant, and just wait, they will find a way around it. And so the other part with that is just even doing an audit of your systems. Making a list of all the different things that we access, where is all the information stored, and how do we know that we have the same level of authentication or protection around each area? And some of these things can be somewhat hidden because if the attacker, because it's not just humans that are, or accounts that are authenticating, we've got service accounts and we've got other apps that are authenticating to each other as well. So could there be a weak link in the authentication between different applications versus an individual user? So it's just the proliferation of technology. It's spread out everywhere. The bad guys are after it. Most of us are not full-time authentication administrators. We're doing other things to make sure that our users can have the services they want and that we can do the things that we want to do. And so it's a combination of all those things.
So my takeaway there is we're only as strong as our weakest application and authentication mechanism that it can handle. And keeping track of just all the applications and environment can be difficult. I find that we often talk about doing an inventory, and it's hard to keep track of all the applications you have, all the systems that you have. And as they keep changing and upgrading and the dynamic nature of our environments, it's hard to keep up. Anything else to add from our other panelists on this topic?
Well, one other thing along with that is, you said adding applications. Well, thank goodness, most of us are in the Microsoft 365 cloud. They give us new applications all the time and never even tell us. So thanks, guys. We appreciate you just giving us something, but I kind of need to know about that.
Yeah, it's tough to keep up with just that ecosystem alone. Yeah. Awesome.
Hey, Corey, I got three quick things, but I'll focus on the third. But, one is what David spoke about, the constant technical change. I would equate that to maybe Olympic performance enhancing drug testing, where there's a new drug, there's a test for it, there's a new method, there's a test for it, constant battle for the criminals and the corrective action folks to stay ahead of each other. Second one is, the educational component. I imagine the Brians and David and all their staffs of the world are incredibly busy dealing with firefighting, hard to invest the time in that education and so forth. But the third item, which is a little bit more my domain, I would just suggest there are some elements of employee pushback or acceptance. In the past, nobody even wanted to do a MFA. Now they were forced to do MFA, so they have to click OK or whatever. Now with Microsoft, you have to at times put a 2-digit number in. I'm sure in the future, and David and Brian know way more about this than me, there'll be even bigger asks. And trying to engage your employees and make them aware of the fact that this is critically important and they need to fully participate is a very important challenge.
That's a really good point. I feel like it's a constant struggle to balance efficiency and convenience with security. And it always seems like convenience and efficiency come at a cost on the security side. So excellent point. Let's see. Let's move on to our next question. What are most of us doing well in this area? And what do most of us need to do better when it comes to our authentication implementations? Brian, let's turn to you to start this one off.
So I think, yeah, we've talked a lot about, you know, 2FA, MFA already. So I think we're both in the legal industry and most industries are over 90% adoption, which is great. I don't know about that last 10% or, you know, how they're still in business or if they'll continue to be in business if they don't have it. But, you know, so that's good. We've kind of accepted that as like a bare minimum, like, hey, you know, you need to have two-factor on your corporate accounts. We mentioned the, you know, the MFA, the number matching. So that's once you've established that as a baseline, as, you know, as David mentioned, all right, well, now the attackers are going to figure out a way around that. Some high profile breaches had been through, you know, they've reached 2FA and it wasn't through like a SIM swap. It was just, you know, they just kept dumping, you know, authentication requests and, you know, someone just gave up or, you know, where they were socially engineered. You know, we read about, you know, banking scams where they're like, oh, this is your bank calling and oh, we're going to, you know, what's your login and we're going to text you a passcode, read it back to me. So just making people aware, like, hey, just because you have 2FA, like you still need to be vigilant. You still have to stop and think sometimes. I think, you know, making password managers available is as a default in an organization is something that, you know, is gaining adoption and acceptance is kind of like a bare minimum. I've seen that on some security audits and, you know, applications for cyber insurance is something that, you know, just like 2FA, like, hey, are you doing this as a good thing? And, you know, when I've been enrolling people in it and I kind of show them like, this is where you're reusing passwords and this is, you know, these are bad passwords that they've been breached and their eyes kind of open up a little bit. And, you know, all of us are guilty of, you know, the password reuse or like, well, you know, I haven't been forced to change it. So I've been using this for, you know, 10 years and like, well, guess what? It's on a breach list. So kind of making people aware, seeing what's out there, like how often they're reusing things and, you know, taking action when something's on a breach list. You know, further using along lines of 2FA, you know, enforcing initial access, like, hey, you know, we're not going to allow logins from certain countries or maybe any country besides the US unless, you know, you let us know that you're going to be traveling to this country. Like, okay, we'll open that up just for you to kind of reduce your attack surface. And then, you know, lastly, I'd say, you know, using either a software or a service like, you know, David's company to monitor for anomalies, right? Because we can't always, you know, there's no way we can look at every login and, you know, look at, especially at, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, but having a service that's saying like, hey, you know, we noticed this user is, you know, has an impossible login. They're, you know, they're here, but they're also here, you know, 1,000 miles away, 10 minutes later. So, you know, further using those types of services, I think is something that that will continue and is going to be a must have.
Great points. Any other comments on this?
I would say that the overall level of cybersecurity, especially of firms and just in general, has had to increase. Or to Brian's point, if you didn't, you have suffered a major event. You've had a ransomware event. You've felt some pain, or you've even gone out of business, which unfortunately has happened to some folks. So the overall level, it continues to increase. So what I think that folks do well, they do well at the basics, but then where they fail is they don't look at that audit that, like we talked about, or that inventory. Hey, I turned on to, you know, MFA for remote access and for email. Great. Well, you've got, you know, 6 other things that aren't configured, or they're configured weekly. The other weaker links in the chain are, what happens if you, how often do you have to re-authenticate? What's the re-authentication process? Because as we all know, hey, we turn on MFA, but we know, even ourselves included, every single time we use a resource that we use regular, we don't want to keep pressing a button for MFA to come in. So what do? We have tokens that expire after a certain period of time. So sometimes those tokens don't expire for a long time. And so that causes weaknesses as well. So the point I'm getting at is the devil's in the details. And I think that folks are getting better at getting that base level started, but not spending that additional time in the details to make sure that other services and that some of the other configurations, that even though you have stronger authentication, there are still opportunities for it to be taken advantage of.
Hey, and Corey, I could just offer a couple quick thoughts to build on David's comments, where he, you know, indicates it's necessary to look at the details. And I think that is 100% true. There's a recent ILTA technology security survey co-sponsored by Conversant. It's a great piece of work. I encourage everybody to take a look at it. And in there, there's a tremendous amount of material about self-assessment and honest introspective and candor. Essentially, where are you and where do you think you are and where are you really? And I would equate that to maybe any of us going to our annual physical. We all probably think, hey, I'm really, really healthy. I'm doing great, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, but then when you see your lipid profile or A1C level or your creatinine or whatever, that may or may not be true, right? So I think, you know, Brian and David have many times talked about the various details and the need to look internally. And nobody really wants to do that, right? Everybody wants to think I'm in the upper quadrant, but you really have to focus on honest, detailed look into your own organization to truly assess where you are. Because if you don't do that, you're never going to move forward. You're never really going to be in that top quadrant.
Right. Great point, Ken. It almost seems like sometimes you have to have a third party come in, and you all alluded to that in some cases you need to have others pen test your environment to kind of give you that clarity, because sometimes you just don't dig deeply enough, it seems to me.
I don't think Dave agrees with that, but the rest of us would. That's a joke.
not quite as open to that, Dave.
we're glad to come call your baby ugly if you really need us to.
Oh, funny. Well, David, could we talk a little bit about the future of authentication and what you're seeing? I know we've mentioned a little bit about FIDO2, perhaps some other technologies. What are you seeing on the horizon? What can we expect in the future?
Yeah, a lot of folks are going to be moving more towards a passwordless authentication, to where we could include some combination of biometrics as well, but where a token is generated by the device. So basically, instead of, you know, 2FA, by definition, it's going to have multi-factor built into it, because the particular device and potentially the location of where you're coming from, and even coupled maybe with a biometric or some other behavioral analysis, is going to be what allows you to go in without even typing a password. Now, there's passwords will probably never completely go away, but we're looking at these things that to make it a better profile of who is actually using this account, because the account is the account. And just because I know a username and password doesn't mean that I am the intended person who is using that username and password to access that account. So the future is looking at different things now that we do have other technologies available to us. For example, the speed in which you type your password in, if we are still going to use a password, you know, folks that are quite used to typing that password, or individuals might have a certain cadence on their keyboard that we can also track and those types of things as well. So it's getting, we're adding more factors than just 2FA, and multi-factor and multiple data inputs and context of authentication is making the chance, the case that, hey, this really is, it's a high degree of certainty that the person is supposed to be using this account is that person based on these additional factors.
Very interesting. I was just imagining the person in the morning who's starting to drink their coffee and types just one character and takes a sip might not get in the future. That's interesting. Right. I hadn't heard about that.
Hey, Corey, I'll just throw out another thought. And it came to me last night. I was actually watching the CBS Evening News on July 11th, if anybody actually wants to go back and look at this. But there was this fairly incredible segment where artificial intelligence clones people's voices.
Yeah.
And does it so well that the reporter's mother was even fooled into releasing a driver's license number or something like that. And then the premise of the segment was, no matter how good technology is, no matter how advanced technology is, there might be a future need for things like manual callbacks or secret code words that only the two parties involved might know. And you know, we're speaking about the future, so who knows what the future might hold. I'm sure it's going to be almost exclusively and primarily technological in nature, as David just pointed out, but it's possible technology might become so advanced, we might have to take a step back and do a few things manually also. I mean, who knows?
That balance again, convenience versus security. Yeah, very interesting. Brian, anything that you wanted to add?
No, I just what David mentioned about, you know, the pass keys, if you're wanting to know more about how that works. So the website is webauthn.io, webauthn as Nancy.io. You can actually kind of test it out. This is a site run by Duo, which is owned by Cisco. And you can actually test out whether you have a physical like YubiKey or even a device. You can, and it's not a phishing site. You're not putting in your password, but you can kind of test out like, okay, I'm going to use my email address and now I'm going to use a physical device like my phone to kind of test it out. And if you have an Apple or a Google account, you're probably already used to something like this where you go to sign in and you're like, okay, well, I have to approve it from a device that's already known. So some of us may already be using this type of technology in our personal lives. And I think we'll start to see it extend into the corporate world as well.
Great. Oh, thanks for that reference. I think we're just about at time. So I was hoping we could just get a little bit of advice for people who are new in this area that might be a little bit overwhelmed. What advice would you give to these folks to get started? Maybe start with Brian again, go ahead.
Sure. Just interacting with the ILTA community, which I'm sure hopefully everyone's familiar with. There's a LegalSec community group, which is great for kind of raising questions like, hey, you know, I really feel like we need to revise our password policy. Has anyone had any success with that recently? Because, you know, as we've talked about, there's always pushback and there's always like, well, what are other firms doing? And sometimes that's your greatest ammunition. Like, you know, firms don't want to be left behind. Like, well, every other firm is, you know, make something up. They're going to 20 character passwords. Oh, really? I don't know if you'll find that, but you know, you'll find, you know, definitely people that are willing to help. And if you're part of the LSISAT, which is a, you know, legal services information sharing group, it's, you know, similar. Reach out to other people in your community. It's great to hear how other people are solving the challenges.
Hey, Corey, and I'll just really briefly add, Brian spoke about ILTA, tons of great resources there. It's not my field, but I think ISC2 is another awesome organization. I think they have a program to get 1 million folks certified in cybersecurity that's either free or close to free. So for somebody brand new, just going to ISC2.org, I think it is, and checking out what they have to offer is probably some decent advice.
Awesome. Thank you. David?
Yeah, there's a ton of information out there. I would suggest that most of your major players have got some education. Like, I mean, even if you just look at Google and look at some of their security tutorials, Microsoft does the same thing. They've got things at a high level, talk about, you know, what they offer and the strength of them. We've mentioned FIDO2. Their site has a lot of tutorials on why their methods of authentication they feel are going to be stronger and better than some of the previous methods, and they've got tutorials there. So obviously there's a lot of things to read, and you could say, well, what do I read? And I think it goes back to what both Brian and Ken said, and especially with being part of the ILTA community, you've got folks who have already spent some time, you know, deciphering some of these things, and they're glad to point you in the right direction as you go.
Awesome. Well, thank you, each one of you, for taking the time out to share your expertise and knowledge with us. I know I've learned a couple of things that I hadn't heard about before. And I want to thank the audience who will listen to this podcast in the future for taking the time out and participating in ILTA. Thanks to you all.
Thanks for having us.